and blessings. You are now listening to the Willingboro and Vicinity NAACP podcast.
Mike Chen. Chen.
I am William Weston, the Vice President and Communications Chair.
And I am Samantha Whitfield, the President of the branch.
All right. How are you doing, President Whitfield?
I'm good. I'm feeling really good. I just got back from the National Convention, the 110th NAACP National Convention in Detroit, Michigan.
Yes. Was it a great turnout?
It was awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome turnout. Meeting with freedom fighters from across the country, coast to coast, Alaska, all over. So it was great to have that fellowship time, to get refueled, re-energized, have lots of encouraging words spoken to us. We got our marching orders and our chant, and the theme of the convention this year was "When We Fight,
We win. There we go.
So it was really good to have that time and to refocus on the work of the NAACP, to strategize with other freedom fighters about what we have going on in our respective areas and some of the issues that we're facing, discussing different tactics to address those situations and how we can move forward to strengthen the NAACP and to forward the mission of civil rights and social justice. So it was really good to just have that time with each other.
What type of things did they give you to give back to the branch?
So the purpose of the annual convention is to review and to pass the resolutions that will be put into effect for the branches across the United States. So the resolutions committee considers resolutions that are submitted from May 8th to May 10th, and then they send out the resolutions packet to branches to review before the national convention. And then delegates at the convention vote on those resolutions. We voted on the resolutions beginning on July 23rd. And then once they're all voted on and approved, they're ratified by the Board of National Directors and they become official NAACP policy.
All right. Yeah, I saw some of the resolutions that you brought back.
Yes. And I think there were two really hot-button issues or hot-button resolutions that we discussed at the convention. So the first was the call for the impeachment of Donald Trump. And that we had the privilege of having Representative Al Green of Texas come and present this resolution to the body of delegates and members that were in attendance to the convention. So we did post this resolution on our Facebook page, the Willingboro and Vicinity NAACP Facebook page. So if you'd like to read the full resolution, you can see it there. But I will just read the "Be it finally resolved that Donald John Trump, by causing such harm to the society of the United States, is unfit to be president and warrants impeachment, trial, and removal from office." And this was signed by Leon Russell, the National Board of Directors Chair. Also, Derek Johnson, the President and CEO, and the great Mama Dukes, Hazel Dukes, the Vice Chair of the Convention Planning Committee. So this was really impactful legislation that we passed as delegates, and I felt like it was an honor, and I was a part of history in the making, you know, voting on this resolution. So I feel really good about that, and I'm happy that the NAACP has taken an official stance on the impeachment. And, you know, I feel very confident about where it could lead, because as the motto for the convention was, "When we fight, we win. And that just is very encouraging. So I will keep that saying with me for the remainder of the year until the 111th National Convention, which, drum roll, where will it be taking place? Boston!
All right. I may make it.
Yeah, so we'll be in Boston next year.
All right. Maybe we can just do the podcast in Boston.
Hey, that would be dope. Yeah,
bring a little setup.
Bring people in?
Yes.
To like our booth?
We're live.
Oh, that would be so dope.
Live on the convention floor.
Oh, we could get press badges.
Yeah.
I would love that secretly.
Okay. But before we get sidetracked, the other major resolution that was passed was concerning reparations.
So that is always a hot topic in the NAACP, fighting for reparations, which is
what we deserve.
I want my reparations. I don't know about you, but I want mine. So the resolution discusses the reasons for reparations. It also goes through some of the potential components of what reparations will be. So some of the spirited discussion and very passionate discussion came from where those components would lie. So there was a part where in the resolution as written, it had called for the rights to the cannabis industry. And it talked about how we can mandate equity within that developing industry. I think there was some contention between if that would hinder reparations from being passed or further discussion going on. So it was voted by the delegates to remove that portion of the, you know, reparations package in what was proposed in this resolution. So that part came out, but there was also another part about monetary compensation, and the monetary compensation was for $600,000 per person.
Oh my.
So there was some, I know, a payment of $600,000, and look, I ain't mad at it. Write my check.
I feel that, because we as a people were pushed back behind the starting line, and the playing field's uneven. Because of these things, we tend not to have generational wealth. So reparations in themselves are just a token of fairness, a compensation for where we are.
Right. So there was some discussion on the $600,000 payment, if that was too narrow-minded, if what we're asking for should be more broad, like free education, free higher education. And yeah, they were talking about the payment of the $600,000 would be tax-free. There was just a lot of discussion around it. So there were some adjustments to it. But there also is social services mandate about the disparity within social services. And of course, there is the standard land grant of 40 acres that was included. And I mean, it's up to you what you do with it. You can sell it. I don't know. But I want my $600,000 check and my 40 acres. I want both. All right. But anyway, the resolution concludes with, therefore, be it resolved that the NAACP reaffirms and stands in favor of financial reparations for African Americans and those of African descent in the United States that are descendants of the slavery and Jim Crow era.
All right.
So that is the resolution. So, yeah, it was really good. And because that is the key component of the, or the reason why we have the convention, it's always great to do that. But that was not the only thing that happened at the convention. There were many things that happened at the convention. And on the first couple days that I got there, we had a next gen leadership training for the first 2 days on Friday and Saturday. They were all day trainings, 12 hours straight, working lunches, working dinners. It was very intense. So the Next Gen program is an intense Leadership Program, and we'll do a whole episode on that. But we had the opportunity to have an intergenerational panel talking about intergenerational organizing, networking, and relations within our branches across the United States. So we heard from Amos C. Brown. He's a national board member and a long, long, long time member of the NAACP. He was one of the founders of the youth in college portion of the NAACP. So he imparted some wisdom on intergenerational relations with us on this panel. Also on the panel, we had our very own Richard Smith, president of the New Jersey State Conference, and Yolanda Melville Esquire, who is of the Atlantic City branch and their legal redress chair, and also one of the National Legal Council members. So, yes, they all participated on it, but we had some wise words from Amos.
That impacted me so that I ran to the newly appointed field secretary, Mr. McElwally Evers, and I told him how upset I was about what those two evil white men did to my friend, who was 14 years old, the same age as I. Never shall forget what Mr. Evers said. He said, Amos, don't just be mad or sad. Let's be smart. Let's organize a youth council of the NAACP so that you and your young friends will learn how to fight this evil of race and injustice in a smart, strategic, and consistent way. And since that day, when I organized the first youth council, the age of 14 in Mississippi, I've been on the battlefield, and I ain't tired yet.
Dr. Amos,
I see this thing as likened unto a mule plowing a field. Where I came from in Mississippi, if you really wanted to have a successful plowing and you plowed a straight road, you never hooked up two old mules to plow by themselves. And neither did you hook up two young mules to plow by themselves. You always hooked up an old mule and a young mule. Don't you let nobody con you or fool you. The NAACP ain't no dead organization of old folks.
All right.
You won't find in these United States of America no assemblage with this large a number of young people involved in an association. And yet, this gaslighting has told a lie that NAACP was made up of old folks. You young folks, you are here. So just stay hooked up with us because we got a whole lot of plowing to do. We've got to plow this field and get that moron out of that White House.
All right, so yeah, as Amos said, we have to go through this together. The young and the old and the young. We need the wisdom of our senior saints and the energy of our next gen. So working together, we are that old mule and young mule plowing the field towards justice. This is a charge. For intergenerational relations, and if there are issues within your branch, we encourage you to sit down and talk and really talk about how you can work together to move forward. This organization cannot survive just with the members that we have. We have to continually be growing, continually be gaining new members and using fresh ideas and new technologies. Look at this podcast. This is new technology that we're using. So you need that cooperation.
Yeah, and I hope that leadership can have their own podcast, like a Derek Johnson monthly podcast.
That'd be dope.
Yeah, he's charismatic. He talks well.
National is working on something, so keep your ear to the ground on a national podcast.
Okay, National. I hear what you're doing.
Outside of that, we did have regional meetings. That is one of the other components of the national convention. Here in New Jersey, we are part of Region 2. Region 2, stand up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's sweet.
And Region 2 consists of Connecticut, Delaware, Maine, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Vermont, and for our international members, Europe.
So I did have a chance after that Region 2 meeting to connect with Scott X. Estale, who we talked on a previous episode about, and his Million Jobs campaign for the NAACP. So I was able to talk a little bit with him about the Million Jobs campaign and how it's going so far. So
here it is.
I'm here with Scott X. Estale. He is a national board member for the NAACP and the Connecticut State Conference president. Hi, Scott.
You got it. You're doing a wonderful job, Oprah Winfrey.
Thank you so much. I try. I do try.
You're doing it.
So, we talked a little bit on a previous episode about your Million Jobs campaign.
You did?
Yes.
That's great.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the campaign?
Well, it's a pilot program right now. We're starting in Connecticut. The objective, our long-term goal is to get 1 million jobs for the formerly incarcerated nationwide. And right now, we're striving to get 10,000 jobs over the next 3 years in the state of Connecticut. So the breakdown primarily is that there's 300 million people in the country. I should say approximately 300 million people in the country. And Connecticut has 3 million people in Connecticut. Excuse me. And what we're striving to do is to pretty much use the formula that Connecticut is 1% of the entire nation. So out of the 1 million jobs that we're striving to get, 1% of that would be 10,000 jobs.
Okay.
So if we were to go to California, which is 12% of the nation, we try to get 120,000 jobs there. We're doing pretty good so far. So the way it goes is that in our communities right now, people are using this reentry thing as a hustle. Mm-hmm. And what they're doing is they're doing the training, and there's a lot of training, and no job at the end.
Right.
Training, and no job. And it's frustrating a lot of young males and young females in our communities.
Absolutely.
And I have young people coming to me saying that, you know, I've cut off all my braids. I'm pulling up my pants. I'm wearing a shirt and tie every day. I'm covering my tattoos. I'm doing everything they're asking me to do, but there's still no job at the end of it. And they're very frustrated. And I think it's imperative that the NAACP use our vast network of relationships with massive corporations that support us at national conventions, Freedom Fund dinners, and these relationships that we have. We need to force these companies to set aside some jobs for our people. And if we're going to have a meaningful relationship, it has to be a relationship of substance. So we're calling these companies to the carpet and asking them to bring some jobs to the table. And we're doing very good. We have companies such as Amazon, Uber, Lyft, Turner Construction, CVS, Walgreens, ONG Construction, Sikorsky, Pratt & Whitney, UTC, Electric Boat. So we have some major companies around the table.
Wow.
And Yale University, Yale Hospital Systems. Yale Hospital Systems is one of the largest employers in the state of Connecticut. And John Hopkins Hospital is one of the number one employers for formerly incarcerated people in the nation. They're down in Baltimore, Maryland. And they have this large toolkit in the formula that they've set up to hire formerly incarcerated individuals. We sat down with the hospital systems in Connecticut, and those are the number one employers since the manufacturing companies have moved on to, actually moved overseas. So what we're striving to do is sit down with the hospitals and let them earmark some jobs for formerly incarcerated individuals. And in the conversation that we had with Yale Hospital Systems, out of the 26,000 jobs, they're going to put around 2,500 to 3,500 jobs over to the side.
Wow.
So with that and the 1,500 jobs that we can get in construction and the advanced manufacturing jobs, opportunities in the state of Connecticut, a soft number right now is around 8,000, and we haven't even talked to all the corporations.
Wow.
Right.
So you're well on your way to meet your goal.
And remember, you know, we're trying to put this pilot together and tighten it real tight before we come to New Jersey, because New Jersey is going to be the next state that we come to.
Absolutely.
You guys got a lot of opportunities.
We do. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate
you. Well, I'm looking forward to working with you.
Let's do it. We're in the battlefield.
Jersey, here we come.
Here we come.
All right.
Thank you so much.
All right.
So, yeah, there are lots of opportunities to earmark those jobs for those who have been recently released or formerly incarcerated, and not leave out, you know, the other job seekers that are out there. So especially in some of the states that have higher numbers, I think it'd be important to include some of those other categories of job seekers, from the recently graduated or those in the trades and things of that sort. I think it's important that we also look at those industries to secure some of these jobs. But moving right into talking about New Jersey specifically with the million jobs, I sat down with President Richard Smith of the New Jersey State Conference about how the million jobs will be coming to New Jersey.
I'm back with President Richard Smith of the New Jersey State Conference, and I talked a little earlier to Scott Exdale about the Million Jobs campaign. And he was saying about the New Jersey will be the next stopping point of the 1 million jobs. So can you tell us a little bit about the effort in New Jersey?
We are starting ours. We supported Scott when he did the kickoff in Connecticut with the Million Jobs campaign. We're trying to bring it to New Jersey. Scott and I are on the same wavelength that there's no better social program than a job. And I feel the two most important things is a place to live and a job.
Absolutely.
And this gives us an opportunity to give folks who have a blemish on their record, who are coming back from being incarcerated, an opportunity to change their lives, become productive citizens in the community. And we're looking forward to it. We've had some conversations with businesses in Camden. You know, there's a lot of conversation about the tax abatements of these companies that have come into Camden. So we thought that Camden would be a great place to start off, because it's our obligation to go and knock on their doors to ensure that they are hiring people of color, number one, but also encouraging them to give individuals who have a blemish on the record an opportunity.
Right.
We're doing that. We've already started the conversation, and we're looking around sometime mid-August to get it up and running.
Awesome. So what is our goal in New Jersey for the number of jobs?
Well, in Connecticut, like Scott indicated, they're 1% of the population, so they're looking at about 10,000 jobs. We're about 2% of the population, so we're looking at about 20,000 jobs statewide. So we want to start it in Camden and then move it throughout the state, whether it be in Atlantic City, Trenton, New Brunswick, Newark, Patterson, all across the state until we reach our goal over the next 5 years.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again.
All right.
And I look forward to the rollout.
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
Awesome.
So also, we had a seminar on Black women running for office around the country, and there was a roundtable session where women who have run for office, are running for office, or thinking about running for office got together and were able to get clued into some resources that are available. One of the speakers that we had in that panel discussion was Glenda Carr, and she's the president and CEO of Higher Heights. Higher Heights is the only national organization providing Black women with a political home exclusively dedicated to harnessing their power to elect Black women influence elections and advance progressive policies. So that was one really key takeaways that I got from the convention are the seminars that we had. There were seminars on all types of different topics, from voting rights and election security to labor to economic development. There were sessions all across. But I think the Black Women Running for Office was a very key session that we had, especially with some of the big wins that we've had in the past election. It was really good to see that. But there were a few upsets, and we had the honor of having Stacey Abrams as our keynote speaker at the Clarence Mitchell Luncheon, which was an awesome choice, and it really highlighted what the goal of gaining some of these political position is. It's not really about the individual and the individual win. It's about a collective move forward towards a better society. And Stacey just frames it really well with 3 points that we should be doing when we are acting in our branches. So we need to plan, we need to pursue, and we need to persist.
Amen. Roll the tape.
These are solvable problems, and these are our problems. But the power for change is in our hands. And so I'm going to leave you with 3 charges. First, we must plan. Say plan. You are here to talk about what needs to be done, but this isn't rocket science. We need to show up and show out and show them who we are. But that means actually talking about who's going to do the work, who's going to raise the money, who's going to be held accountable. And it's not about infighting about who gets the credit. It's about fighting the enemy, not ourselves. So over the next few days of this conference, I need you to understand and remember not only who you are, but whose you are and why you're here. We have to plan for victory. We can't keep fighting 2008 or 1998 or 1988. We've got to be fighting for 2020 and beyond. So say it with me. We're going to plan. Next, we're going to pursue. Say pursue. Once we've had our fun in the conference, once we've written down our plans, we're not going to forget that we got to do the work when we get back home. Because in states across this country, we have to start putting in place voter protection operations today. We've got to start putting in place voter registration efforts today. We've got to make sure that the census is not just a conversation, but an action plan that we are pursuing, that we're already talking about what's going to happen. That when you leave here not only with a plan, but with a commitment to pursue justice. Say pursue. They are chasing us. We can't let them catch us. But we can chase freedom and we can get it. We can chase power and we can have it. We can pursue our identities and our opportunities together. So number one, we're going to do what? And then we're going to. And if in November 2020 something has gone horribly wrong, we are going to do what we have always done, and we are going to persist. Say persist. I'm going to tell y'all a secret. November 2020, if every person we want gets the job we've asked them for, it will not fix America. Politicians aren't magic. Voting isn't magic. Persistence requires that we recognize the fight is never over. The fight's not about the last bell ringing. The fight's about the action. The fight's about keeping your fist up, not just to punch something, but to raise our fist in recognition of something. We have to fight every day. We have to persist because poverty persists. Because injustice persists. Because racism is real. Xenophobia is real. Bigotry is real. Homophobia didn't go away because same-sex marriage became legal in the United States. We know that the isms that are the original sin of America will persist. But we fight and we win when we persist as well. Say persist. When we recognize that it's not just about resistance, It's about persistence. Resistance is saying, I'm not going to let you go any further, but persistence is about pushing the line farther and farther away. Because 2020 isn't going to be enough. 2022 isn't going to be enough. 2024, 2026, 2028. We will keep fighting as long as there is a fight to be had. Because for as long as power is out there, there are going to be those who try to wrest it from us. But if we plan, if we pursue, if we persist, the power will be ours. Thank you so much.